There are times in life when you have a moment and you know that that moment is going to end up in history, and that moment is a very special moment. I had one of those moments with my good friend and mentor, Les Brown, who he himself is a legend, and we got a chance to sit down and talk. We had been talking about it for years, but never gotten a chance to do it. Shout out to Dr. Valerie that made it all happen. Shout out, Dr. Val. I'm so grateful to you. You have no idea. So we had this very special time capsule moment, and I wanted to share it with you. Now, if you don't know who Les Brown is, you've probably been living underneath a rock for the last 30 or 40 years. By far, the best motivator you will ever hear about in your lifetime. I've sat with top athletes, top executives, top ministers, and when they talk about Les Brown, they say, "This guy's the GOAT. He's the greatest of all time." I've sat across the room from people you wouldn't even believe. I sat across the room, and when I asked them who motivates them, who inspires them, it's amazing how many people tell me Les Brown, Les Brown, Les Brown. Now, he has a new book called You Gotta Be Hungry. You need to get this book. This book will change your life. He's also offering coaching for people that want to be coached by him in terms of speaking. He's got a great speaking program. You need to plug into that if you're really serious about becoming a strategic communicator for the 21st century. He's dedicated his life to rhetoric. He's dedicated his life to communicating to people's hearts, and it's one of the best programs out there, bar none. So please get the program. Go to lesbrown.com and find out more about this program. And please listen in, and please reach out to me. Let me know what you think about it. One of the best interviews I've ever done. So here it is.
How does one define the undefinable? They call you a motivational speaker, a state legislator, a TV personality, a best-selling author, a transformational coach. I say you're much more than that, Les. You've been endowed by the Creator with a certain celestial gift that even when you use them, the angels sit back filled with awe and wonder. Les Brown is a divine being. I'll say that again. Les Brown is a divine being. We are all divine in our own right, but Les is different. Les is different because he's been activated. He is using his gift to serve humanity. Humanity needed physics, so God gave us Isaac Newton. Humanity needed frescoes, so God gave us Michelangelo, Leonardo, and Donatello. Humanity needed civil rights, so God gave us Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King Jr. Humanity needed automobiles, so God gave us Henry Ford. Humanity needed the Gospels, so God gave us St. Paul. Humanity needed rhetoric, so God gave us Plato and Socrates and Euripides. In this day, I say it, let the record be made. In this day, humanity needed a divinely inspired, didactical, determined, hermeneutical, homiletical, master motivator, so God gave us Les Brown. The first time I heard him speak, it sent an incandescent light that passed my conscious mind straight to my soul. I said, who is this man who speaks words of life? Alexander conquered the world using conquest. Charlemagne using conceptions of Christendom. Julius Caesar uses coups. Jesus Christ used compassion. Lincoln used liberty. Martin Luther King used nonviolent marches. Les Brown has built his empire on empathy, empowerment, and excellence. If they ever tell my story in 100,000 years from now, tell them I had encountered lions in the safaris in Africa, snake charmers in India, wise men in Ethiopia. I've had great friendships with great men such as Zig Ziglar and Ken Blanchard. I've held audiences with heads of states, kings and queens. I've loved my high school sweetheart. But one of the greatest honors of my life, one of the greatest honors of my life has been able to call myself a student of Leslie Calvin Brown, the most eloquent of free black men in the free world, the greatest speaker the United States have produced in the last 500 years. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the greatest motivational speaker planet Earth has ever known, Leslie Calvin Brown.
Who's that you talking about? Who that you talking about? I'm just this baby Brown's baby boy. That's all. Oh my goodness. Oh, how are you, my brother?
I'm doing blessed.
I'm blessed to be in your presence. Let the record show. Yes, sir.
How are you today?
I'm great, and so are you.
You're looking good.
What are you up to, grade one?
Well, just putting in a lot of work, man. You know, sleeping 2 or 3 hours a night, but my wife and my doctor, or my mother, is telling me I need to improve on that. So,
yes.
You know, but I'm hungry, please, like you said. You got to be hungry, right?
Yes, but we need you here.
I know. Well, we're talking about hunger today.
Yes.
And hunger, you said in your book, hunger is the most critical element for creating your greatest life. Would you explain that for us?
Yes. In order for people to begin to go to their next level, and I just want to thank you for who you are and how you're showing up, and the decision that you made that in spite of the coronavirus, that most people are just traumatized and depressed and feeling powerless, in spite of all the things that's going on right now, you've decided consciously to be a light in a very dark period in our history. And in order to break through and to be heard, it requires hunger. Hunger is a willingness to go beyond that which is commonly accepted. Hunger is an understanding that you will fail your way to success. Hunger is a path where you know that as you look at life and look at the things that you want, things are going to happen to you, but it's no time to worry. It's a time to be a warrior. That life is a fight for territory. Mm. And once you start fighting for what you want, what you don't want will automatically take over. Everything that anybody and all the people names that you have called, those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, right thinking, right words, right feelings, right action, right relationships, shall be filled. And so when I talk about hunger, it's about living your life in alignment with your calling. A job is what you get paid for. A calling is what you're made for. Mm. And it gives you access to your superpower. It allows you to live an extraordinary life. We're living in a time now that average is over, that you have to have a mindset to live from your greatness. And when you're pursuing your greatness, you don't know what your limits are. So you act like you don't have any. When you know that you have greatness in you, you know that you've been chosen to do the greater work. And hunger drives that kind of vision, that expanded vision, and your behavior and your relentlessness, and not be satisfied until you accomplish the goals that you're pursuing.
I love that. And you know, this hunger, it starts at a very young age. And you always talk about at a young age, you had some obstacles. You know, you say in your book that by the age of 5, most people have already determined what they can and cannot do. Can you explain how can people actually break free from all this limited thinking?
Well, it requires a conscious, deliberate, determined effort to be engaged in a process that will change how you see yourself. The self-image is Dr. Martin Seligman, who did the most exhaustive study on self-esteem from the University of Minnesota. He said, between the ages of 0 and 5, we determine based upon our circumstances, the things that we see, the conversations that we're exposed to, we determine what's available to us and what's not available to us. And those behaviors, that limited vision, that conditioning determines for the most part what we do. In order to interrupt that, to hack that kind of thinking, it requires that you spend some time in quiet listening, in self-awareness, in reading and listening, and stretching and learning. See, most people are not willing to learn. If you can't learn, you're not willing to learn, nobody can help you. But if you're willing to learn, nobody can stop you.
Wow.
But people that are hungry are willing to learn. They know, there's an old saying, you never find out how much you know until you find out how little you know. So this is a time that we have to be involved in perpetual ongoing learning so that we can create the next greatest version of ourselves.
I love that. I love that. And you said something that really piqued my interest. You said to sit quietly. And the studies that I've been conducting lately, it shows that in the 14th century, if you lived in the 14th century and compared to someone that lives today, someone that lives today has been exposed to more data and more information in one day than someone in the 14th century did in their entire lifetime. So therefore, we're being overloaded with information. But the problem is not the information that we're being exposed to. Are we being exposed to wisdom? Can you talk about the difference between knowledge and wisdom? Because a lot of people have knowledge, but they don't have wisdom.
Well, wisdom comes from experience. We have, according to statistics, over 5,000 hits looking to occupy areas of our mind. 5,000 advertising hits. That's why they call this the attention economy, that in order to get through to people, you have to be able to create an experience that can draw attention to you. And through that experience that you create, that you can hold that attention and then to direct that attention. And so the knowledge that you have to work with it, you have to apply it. People say knowledge is power. No, knowledge that's applied is power. There are a lot of people have knowledge and not doing anything with it. It takes courage to act on your knowledge. Nothing is done without courage. Maya Angelou, I spent a whole day with her and she told me that. And I said, wow, and this is true, because there are people who are very intelligent, have a lot of knowledge, have a lot of education, but they're not willing to become risk takers. This God said, if you're not willing to risk, you can't grow. And you can't, if you're not willing to grow, you can't become your best. And if you can't become your best, you can't be happy. And if you can't be happy, then what else is there? So life is about challenging ourselves and living outside of our comfort zones and challenging ourselves so that we can be led to a part of ourselves that we will never get to know living within the context of our comfort zone.
And I love that. You always talk about moving out of the comfort zone and moving into the faith zone. And just to kind of circle back to what you were saying earlier, you talked about, knowledge. And you always say that if knowledge could actually change people, everybody would be skinny, rich, and what's the third one?
And happy.
And happy. And that's the thing. We have a ubiquitous amount of knowledge, but I don't know if people are actually applying the knowledge. And I, years ago, you sent a voice message to my phone. I was traveling at the time overseas, and I picked up my voice messages. And at the end of your message, you said, with that bass voice, you said, "And you have greatness within you." And that may have been very common to you, but I had never heard have a man say that to me in such a affirming way. And that altered the course of my thinking, and that altered the course of my life. And I'll tell you why. Because sometimes coming up, I came up with very similar to yourself, learning disability. In the third grade, I had a teacher in front of the class say that I was stupid and dumb. And the biggest mistake I've ever made was listening to that teacher. So I kind of took a lot of step back in my confidence during that time. And so with between my learning disability and the teacher putting me down in front of the class, I mean, my self-esteem was shot. But as I began to listen to tapes and develop that self-confidence, something different came out of me. And you always talk about hope. They did a study at Johns Hopkins University, and they put two groups of rats. Group number one, they put them in a bucket and they had them just basically swim. And no one came to help them out. They just died. Some of the rats swam for up to 34 hours. Another group of rats, They put them in there in a bucket, and every few minutes they would take them out. The rats that had the reprieve and the relief, they ended up living a lot longer, and they ended up trying a lot longer. The other rats, after about a few hours, they stopped swimming. They drowned. So talk to us about the power of hope and why, especially right now, with 40 million people unemployed in America, why is it important not to give up the hope? Because hope is all we have.
Hope gives you power in the present and in the future. When you have hope, you have a vision of yourself being successful. You have a feeling that I'm going to make it. You have a perpetual sense of optimism that no matter how bad it is or how bad it gets, I'm going to make it. Hope is your deciding that this is not going to define me. Elsie Robinson said, things may happen around you and things may happen to you, but the only things that really count are the things that happen in you. And so hope is activated by our having a larger vision of ourselves beyond our circumstances and adversities and seeing ourselves being victorious. And it takes discipline to have that. When you get blows back to back, when things happen to you that you don't see coming, when life has just been snatched out from under you, and when somebody stands with a stethoscope around their neck, as Dr. Alfred Gosen, an oncologist, told me, Mr. Brown, 29 years ago, you have prostate cancer, and your PSA is 2,400. Now, 1 to 4 is normal. Cancer is metastasized in 7 areas of your body. And I had a choice. I had a choice when he spoke those words to choose fear. Zig Ziglar says something about fear. He said, most people in a fearful situation, they forget everything and run. They forget that they're more than conquerors. They forget that, he said, I'll never leave you nor forsake you. They forget that they have the power within them to take life on. But there's another small group that they face everything and rise.
Yes.
And so I decided to rise to the occasion to fight that. I decided that cancer was not going to take me out. I decided that whatever I had to do in terms of changing my behavior, changing my mindset, changing my eating, and I eat a lot of rabbit food, that I'm going to be here and live a life that will outlive me. So we're always challenged in life. Life is a fight for territory. And once you stop fighting for what you want, what you don't want will automatically take over.
And I love that you're speaking words of affirmation. I love that you're speaking words of hope. I recently participated in an experiment. So I took 3 bowls and I put it with rice. You know, us folks, we love our rice. So I put 3 bowls of rice. The first one, I labeled it negative words. The second one, I labeled it positive words. The third one, I labeled neutral words or do nothing with. So over the course of 30 days, the negative one, I said a whole bunch of negative things to it. You're ugly, you're stupid, you're dumb, and this. The one that's positive, I said, you have greatness within you. You are magnificent. You're awesome. The neutral one, I left it alone. And as sure as I'm standing in front of you right now, the one that I spoke negative words to, it had black, grimy, moldy. It was disgusting. It was absolutely disgusting. The one that I said positive words, it remained, it had a little bit of mold, but it remained almost in perfect condition. The one that was neutral, it was disgusting too, but not as disgusting as the one that I did the negative words to. What this taught me was one thing, the power of words. Would you tell us on a daily routine wise, what are some words that you speak of hope to yourself and to those around you that brings that energy, that vibrational thing that comes?
There was a similar Japanese study that they used plants to do the same thing that you did with rice. And the Book of Life says death and life is in the tongue. Words are powerful. It was Steve Jobs who said nothing happens until it's spoken, because words can form cultures and how people see themselves and how they perform. If I say to you, you can't make it, somebody else has to come along according to a study from MIT and say, you can make it, you can make it, you can make it 17 times to neutralize that one time, because it is known that negative comments and statements are 10 to 15 times more powerful than a positive statement. So we have to make a conscious, deliberate, determined effort to watch our conversations, because it is true, death and life is in the tongue. I was in a very powerful position in my life. I've been paid $5 million to do a talk show. I was in New York, in Manhattan. And as I was going through the studio, my mental conditioning activated itself. And that conversation came up in me. It said, Les Brown, this is too good to be true. Something is bound to happen. And it did. I spoke death on my own dream. And shortly thereafter, the show was canceled. So we have to be conscious of the words that we speak. We have to be conscious of the words that we listen to. People say garbage in, garbage out. No, garbage in, garbage stays, and it stinks. And it shows up in attitude, and it shows up in behavior, and it shows up in how you perform in life. It creates cultures, it shapes your thinking, and it becomes a predominant factor in your life on how far you go in your life, because nothing happens that does not get into your ears and that you see with your eyes. We are being programmed constantly. There's a program called The Social Dilemma. And it talks about the fact that we are being programmed constantly with algorithms, and we're not even aware of it. The men who created the technology and talk about how it corrupts the mind of our children, give you case in point. My two granddaughters living in the same house, one said, I'm not taking the coronavirus shot because it's the mark of the beast. Sierra, where did you get that from? She couldn't even remember. Sydney said, I'm taking the shot because I'm listening to Dr. Farsi. Now, they both were exposed to information, but what they have found, these algorithms are corrupting the thinking of our children. And many of the guys who created this technology, they found themselves thinking about things and doing things, and they became unaware that their own technology was governing their behavior.
Wow.
We're living in a different kind of time. And so we have to monitor what our intake is, what we watch, what we listen to, because messages that are being programming our minds, that if we don't actively program our own minds, then we will be the product of the minds that are being programmed.
Yes, and I love that, because you talk about the technology and the phones. I say, let the phones be smart, let the humans be wise, right? And we don't want to be controlled by the technology. We want to use that technology in a very great way. Now, you talk about your mother, and I want to share this one quote, and it's one of my favorite quote. Everything I am and hope to be is because of my mother. This is a quote you like to share from Abraham Lincoln. Tell us about Miss Mamie Brown, this wonderful saint, this wonderful angel of God. Tell us about Miss Mamie Brown.
The lady from hospice said the day that my mother passed, she covered the ground she stood on. My mother was a person who she believed walked by faith and not by sight. A reporter asked her, how did you know that you, who never had any children, can raise seven children, not your children, seven children, you never had any children, by yourself? And she said, I just believe that the Lord will make a way somehow. And so my mother was a woman of faith. See, I've come to know that faith not tested can't be trusted.
That's deep.
It's easy to have faith when your bills are paid, you got your health, and the odds are in your favor. But when you don't have things going for you, have faith to come out and to move in the face of the overwhelming odds, because if your faith is strong enough, the odds don't matter. You leap and willing to grow your wings on the way down.
I love it.
If you have faith, you're willing to snatch victory from the jaws of defeat. Yes. And so Mama had a lot of faith that she can do things, and she didn't know how she was going to do it, but she is willing to give it a shot. She's willing to do what she could, where she was, with what she had, and never be satisfied. That sums up my mother. That's me. They call me Mamie's boy.
I love it. Yes, I love it. I always say this. I am who I am because somebody loved me. Somebody tended to me. Somebody cared for me. Somebody believed in me before I even believed in myself. And that's my mother and people like you, coaches and mentors and that. And so you share a story in the book about Miss Harris, who was a woman that your mom worked for. And she basically, you heard your mom clapping, and basically the woman wanted your mom to, she asked your mom to go get a hat for her, her purple hat. Your mom went to get the hat, but she kept clapping very loudly as she was walking through the house. And you asked your mom, she wouldn't tell you. Then Miss Harris actually came up to you and told you the reason that she had your mom clapping was because when Black people are working in her house, she wanted them to clap so that she knows that they're not stealing or thieving anything. How did this impact you? And how do we as a culture try to move past all of this racial stuff and try to come together? Because when you cut our skin, we're all going to bleed red anyway. So how can we come together and share about that experience?
Well, first of all, we live in a culture where the dominant culture is structured to destroy our sense of self. Once you destroy a person's sense of self, you take away their purpose. And once you take away their purpose, they will engage in self-destructive behavior. One of the things I've come to know in this culture here is that hate is more powerful than their morals, than their religious values, mm-hmm. and being logical, rational, or reasonable, or humane. When something happens, there are three acts that take place. There's the perpetrator, there's the victim, and there are the witnesses. And in our culture, one will ask the question, who's the most negative force? And the answer, not the perpetrator, but the witnesses. The people who stand by and watch, those four policemen who saw a Black man being murdered, that they had taken an oath to serve and protect, and they just watched a life being taken as if it had no value. And so I don't think that we will ever change how the majority of people think. Some people will, at different points in their lives, develop a sense of humanity. But there was something that Benjamin Franklin said. He said, until those who are unaffected are as outraged as those who are affected, change will never take place. And so there's some change that's taking place. There's some progress that we make, but ultimately, because of how it's set up, ultimately, yeah. because of the conditioning of the majority race, they're not interested in changing things. And so we have to fight. You know, it was Frederick Douglass who said, we won't get everything that we fight for, but everything that we get, there will be a fight.
Ooh, come on. Yes. I love that. You know, the Irish tell a story of a man who dies and he goes to heaven. And when all of the angels and all the people are looking at him, they look at him and his body has no scars on him. He looks perfect. And St. Peter has this look on his face and he's so distraught and he's so sad. And he looks at this man and he shakes his head and he says, wasn't there anything in life worth fighting for? Was there anything in life worth having scars for, worth putting your life on the line for? And I've always tried to live my life to the point where I live for a purpose much greater than myself. You have a saying to live full and die empty. And my purpose in life is to serve others, not for anything else, but to serve others as I serve my creator. If in the final analysis, what is your message to the world? What is something that burns on the inside of you like an incandescent fire? What is something that wakes you up, you know, that just doesn't You don't even have to push towards it. It pulls you towards it. What is that in your heart that is a constant thing in your life?
To live a life that will outlive me. I aspire to inspire until I expire.
Hoo-wee. I love that. I love that. I love that. And so there's two types of people, right? There's people that have a what I call a growth mindset and people that have a limited mindset. So people with a limited mindset, they never try to progress or they never try to set goals. Why? Because they say, if I'm not good at speaking or if I'm not good at math or if I'm not good at this, they limit themselves. But people with a growth mindset, even though they may have deficiencies, they tend to progress in life. What would you say to someone that's listening to this program right now and they actually have a limited mindset? What can they do? What strategies, what tools can they use to move from having a limited mindset to a growth mindset?
I believe there are three types of people. They're winners, like you. They're losers. And they're people who are winners who have not discovered how to win. And that's where you come in. That's where I come in. And part of the process of developing a growth mindset is the willingness to study, to learn, to invest in yourself. Warren Buffett, who has billions of dollars in real estate, billions of dollars in the stock market, he was asked the question in the last recession, what's the most important investment you can make? And he said, the most important investment you can make is in yourself. That's why you're who you are. That's why who I am, who I am. And what we do, we teach people who are willing to learn how they can begin to discover the next greatest version of themselves. Anybody listening now, if they're willing to put in the time, the effort, and the energy, they can become a totally different person. A turtle can be anything but a turtle. A tree can be anything but a tree. But a human being, choose ye this day whom ye shall serve. We have the power to choose the road less traveled. We have the power to choose to live a life that will outlive us.
This is so true. This is so true. What is the best advice you've ever received?
The best advice I feel that I've ever received is from Lion King. And I received it early on. Simba, you are more than that which you have become. Mr. Leroy Washington said to me, Mr. Brown, someone's opinion of you does not have to become your reality. Mr. Brown, you have something special. You have greatness in you. And when you're pursuing your greatness, you don't know what your limits are, so you act like you don't have any. Go for it, young man. Go for it.
You know, in all my reading, one of the things that troubled me is in the scriptures, you never see Jesus laughing. And Plato, who's considered one of the greatest philosophers of all time, you never see him crying or showing sorrow. And tell us as human beings, why is laughter so important for our mental health and also for our survival? Because when I'm around you, when I'm listening to you, there's a lot of joy that comes in my heart. I mean, I get so fired up. There's been times I've literally been depressed and I've listened to you and it's brought so much joy. So what is the importance of laughter and joy in our experience here as human beings?
My favorite book says laughter is good medicine for the soul and the spirit. I studied psychoneuroimmunology, the mind, immunology, your immune system. And 1 minute of anger weakens your immune system for 4 to 5 hours. But 1 minute of laughter boosts your immune system for over 24 hours. Dr. Norman Cousins, who wrote a book called The Anatomy of Illness, he was a physicist and he was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And he made a conscious decision to watch old comedies. I Love Lucy. Groucho Marx, Jimmy Durante, these old movies, old television programs, comedies, and he laughed himself back to good health. Laughter is very important. When I speak, and when you speak, what we do is distract, dispute, and inspire. We impact a person's what psychologists call their self-explanatory style. Distract them from that. Dispute through our conversation, through our speaking and training. We dismantle their current belief system. When you give a presentation, you create an experience. Oliver Wendell Holmes said that once a man or woman's mind has been expanded with an idea, concept, or experience, it can never be satisfied to going back to where it was. So we orchestrate, your program is designed to orchestrate an experience where people will see themselves differently. And so with words, with ideas, with laughter, with passion, with energy, when people laugh, their minds shut down and their hearts open up. When laughter is used strategically, there's no saying you can take a horse to the water, but you can't make him drink. But if you know how to strategically to get them to laugh, shut their minds down and get in their heart, where your heart is, there your treasure is also, you can transform them from the inside out. There's an African proverb that says, if there's no enemy within, the enemy outside can do us no harm.
I love that. I love that. I love that. And I do something very weird, right? So I went to a cemetery and I kind of imagined my funeral. I know this is morbid. I imagined.
It's not morbid at all. I do training and I have people write their obituary. Continue.
That's yeah. And so I imagine what they would say to me. And this is almost like Stephen Covey say, you start with the end in mind, you begin with the end in mind. So I want you to think about that. And I want you to think, what is it that you want? If you had one final message to the world or if your loved ones, what do you want them to say to you when it's all said and done? What do you want them to say about Les Brown?
I want them to say he lived a full life and he died empty. He lived a life that was governed by love. God is love, and those who dwelleth in love dwelleth in God.
Amen.
And God in them.
Amen.
And so it is.
Amen. Well, you've lived a very interesting life, a very big life. Having said that, and you've known a lot of great people, what are some cool things you've gotten a chance to do because you're quote unquote Les Brown? Like, it could be like an experience you had. It could be meeting someone. What are some cool things that you've gotten a chance to do?
One of the fascinating things I did recently, I stayed in the hotel room, was $23,000 a night.
What?
Or to sleep. That's exactly
one night?
Yeah. One. Wow. I said, what?
What country?
Abu Dhabi.
Wow.
Why? They have the tallest hotel in the world.
The Burj Khalifa, right? Wow. And you knew Nelson Mandela, correct?
Yes. I never met Nelson Mandela. I knew about him. My daughter met him.
That wow. Was the
things I did not accomplish. Yes.
Wow. Wow. That's important. I'm going to say a couple of names and you just tell me one sentence about them. Jim Rohn.
He was profound. When the end comes for you, let it find you conquering a new mountain, not sliding down an old one.
Zig Ziglar.
If you give enough people what they want, they will give you what you want.
Bishop T.D. Jakes.
The enemy in me has caused me more challenges than the enemies outside of me.
Whoo.
Don't let your talents take you where your character can't keep you.
Tony Robbins.
You have the personal power to accomplish and do more than you can ever begin to imagine. Change your state of mind and go for it.
And this person had an impact on my life because I have ancestry in the Bahamas and got a chance to visit with him, Dr. Miles Monroe. He was so gracious. Dr. Miles Monroe.
Now you want to make me cry. Dr. Miles Monroe said, when you know your purpose, that narrows your choices. It horns in on your behavior. It gives you the courage to rob the cemetery of your genius.
I got chills going down my spine right now. Your three favorite books of all time.
The Bible, of course. Mike Williams, my mentor, who wrote the book, The Road to Your Best Stuff. Mike Williams, The Road to Your Best Stuff. And a book that I read years ago that's hard to find by Robert Collier called Secret of the Ages.
Mm. You know, Think and Grow Rich, I look at that as the Old Testament of the personal development and growth of the world today. Listen to what I'm saying, everyone. That's Think and Grow Rich. But the New Testament is You Gotta Be Hungry by Les Brown. And I'm not just saying this because I know him. I have read every book that you can think of out there. This book, You Gotta Be Hungry, is the best book that's ever been written in the last 100 years on personal development and personal accomplishments if you want to go to the next level. It's updated for the modern man of 2020. You need to get this book. Now, we do we do a thing called one and done. And one and done is you just answer with one word. So the first thing is the first thing you grab in the morning.
I don't grab anything in the morning. When I open my eyes, I said, all things work together for good for those who love God and for those who are called according to his purpose.
Awesome.
I lay there and I meditate on that and think about the good things that I'm going to accomplish today, the agenda that I have created for today. Because if you don't have an agenda for your life, you'll be a part of somebody else's agenda. And then I roll out of bed and get on my knees and say, Lord, whatever I face today, together, you and I can handle it. And I thank him. I have seven things that I think about that I thank him for. And then I get up and I'm ready to take on the world.
Hallelujah. Woo! What's the first thing people notice about you?
My flat top. My kid and play hairstyle at 75. How can he have all that hair on his head at 75?
Just tell him I got it like that. What's your biggest strength?
The ability to listen to a story and teach a person how to tell that story, how to create an experience with that story, how to take that story and monetize it and create a national and global reputation with that story.
Mm. You guys hear this? Okay. Greatest weakness?
Sweet potato pie. Yes, yes. I have a sweet tooth, and so I'm disciplining that because nothing tastes as good as health feels.
Me too. I got a sweet tooth too. Cats or dogs?
Dog.
Best friend. Who's your best friend?
My best friend passed. Alexander Wims. We called him Boo.
Rest in peace.
And my best friend now are my circle of friends who we have similar values, we share dreams, and we see ourselves as a family.
I love that. Place on earth you'd like to visit?
Nowhere.
Beaches or snow?
Beaches.
How can someone instantaneously get on Les Brown's good side?
by having a hunger to do something meaningful with your life.
Coffee or tea?
Say it again.
Coffee or tea?
Tea, green tea, because cancer does not like green tea.
That's, you're dropping knowledge on us now. What's your love language?
I don't know. I don't know that.
Yeah, there's a guy named Gary Chapman who wrote a book called Five Love Languages. So one of them is physical touch. That's like you want to touch somebody. Other one is words of affirmation. One of them is gifts, like someone purchasing you physical gifts. One of them is quality time. And I can't think of the fifth one.
Quality time.
Quality time. Okay. What's your vice?
Not exercising.
If you had a choice between love or money, which would you choose?
Love.
And books or magazines?
Books.
Well, I just got to say this. It has been a plum pleasing pleasure and a privilege. Very rarely do you get a chance to give people the roses and the flowers that that you know that they deserve. I would like to say that I am profoundly, profoundly, profoundly grateful. Ralph Waldo Emerson used to say, the greatest gift a man can give is a portion of himself. Leslie Brown, thank you for being in my life. Thank you for giving a portion of yourself to me. I will never, ever, ever, ever be the same. From the first day we met at that Chicago airport, when you gave me that hug and you took my book and gave me your book, and you just, from that moment on, you've always been an encouraging voice. You've always been someone that is my North Star. Whenever I'm down, you pick me up. Whenever I'm dry, you fill my cup. You are an amazing godsend. Thank you. Thank you. I love you. I pray for you and I honor you. You're one of the greatest human beings the divine has ever graced us with on planet Earth to have. I mean that with every ounce and fiber in my body. So I love you and I thank you.
I love you and I thank you for answering the call on your life. And the best is yet to come. God is just getting started with you. And I'm glad to be here to see it. And so it is. God bless you. I honor your greatness.
I love you.
I love you and I appreciate you so much, more than you know.
It has been a pleasure and a privilege. Please go to GibsonSylvester.com/podcast to find out more about this podcast and also to browse helpful resources that will help you in your personal and business life. Thank you very much.